4.
Welcome to Working Musicians, a feature of theworkingmusician.com. I'm your lovable host, Roger Z. So glad to be here today. And I'm so glad that my special guest visitor, Crawford Brown, contacted me on MySpace.
That's right. Not knowing about the show, but...
Yeah. Well, that's let's talk about that. So I have a MySpace page for my band, but it's kind of all-purpose, Roger Z and the Zygotes. Now, you're a recording engineer for the Loft Recording Studio in Bronxville.
Correct, yes.
So why did you contact me?
Well, I saw that you were friends with some guys I know personally that have been in the studio, and I think you were leaving a comment on one of their pages about being at their show. And so I saw that you were local. I'm pretty sure it was Rick Lubell, who's in Brother of the Road. They do an Allman tribute band.
You know, the Brother of the Road, when I play at the Pauling Tavern in Pauling, New York, some of those guys live up there, and they hang at the bar, and sometimes some of them come up and do a song with us.
Oh, great. Okay.
Cool.
Well, Rick is, I've recorded Rick with a couple of different projects doing original music. So I haven't met the other guys in the band, although he's in a couple of bands, so I've met some of the people he plays with, and that's what I was doing. I was saying, hi, I'm local as well. You know, just see what you're up to and if I can be of help.
So you're drumming up business, is that it?
Well, that's always part of it, yeah.
Well, that's cool. That's awesome. That's what I do. I'm constantly trying to find new musicians to come back on my show. Now, we were talking earlier today that this was very serendipitous, that you contacted me like a week ago.
Right.
And we taped usually Tuesday afternoons, 5:30 or 6 in downtown White Plains, and unfortunately for musicians, that's prime money-making time.
Right, right.
Most musicians who play an instrument really make their money, well, at least local musicians, from teaching.
Right.
Because they make 50, 60 bucks a half an hour, get a little travel time.
Right.
So a lot of times people will agree to do my show, and then I think as it gets closer, they start to think, holy cow.
Right, exactly.
I need the money.
Yeah.
And we were going to schedule something later, but later you would have probably had a recording session.
Well, that's certainly possible. A lot of times it's short notice. It's a crazy schedule because there is no schedule. It's kind of you do what you have to do when it comes up.
Now, are you an owner at the Loft or...
Not really. The Loft was actually started 30 years ago, actually more than that. There were two brothers who were interning. It used to be a children's theater workshop, and they have been there their whole lives. They start out where they played Ted and Al Hemberger. They were interning there. They were both musicians, so they played in some of the productions, and they said, well, gee, we should record ourselves. And then some friends wanted to come in to record, and one thing led to another, and they ended up taking over the space. I've been there for about 7.5 years.
Now, do they own the space, or did they lease it?
It's a long-term lease, I believe, yeah.
Well, when I think long-term, I think 99 years.
Yeah.
That's probably longer term than a rock musician needs to think about.
Yeah, it's, you know, I know that it's long-term, yeah. And then they've been there, as I mentioned, since the early 70s.
I know J.C. Fogerty's in Bronxville. Yeah,
right.
Club. Got very lost going there a couple of months ago.
Yeah, it's right near the train station, and the Loft Recording Studio is right near there. It's a block up from there.
Good. So I wouldn't get lost if I came down.
Hopefully not.
You guys have a website? You were...
Well, yeah, there's a website, Loft Studio, and...
Loftstudio.com?
.com, and there might be some newer and better pictures, actually, at ccbsound.com, which is my website. I'm also on MySpace, and obviously, which you mentioned, and that's also MySpace/ccbsound, S-O-U-N-D. And that has some more up-to-date photos and things.
Now, you make your living full-time as a recording engineer?
Yeah, I like most musicians, you have to do a few different things, but it's all music-related. I produce my own music, and, you know, I've had a chance to get that in some as underscore music in some MTV shows and DVD projects and things like that. And then I've actually been a resident DJ in the city. It's been a few years since I've done that. I was a resident DJ at the Belmont Lounge in Lower Manhattan. And then, of course, recording engineer and producing certain bands that want that kind of help as well.
Now, did you train did you get a degree in as a recording engineer, or did you come up through the Gopher apprentice system?
Well, I was in a band that was pretty successful and, you know, really just came up that way.
Called?
It was called The Debutantes. We were in Providence, Rhode Island. Most people knew us as The Debs. We won the BZN Rock Hunt in Boston 1 year. We played a lot. We had songs on, you know, local radios there, college radio stations, and... yeah, we did pretty well. We were actually offered a contract with Sire, but we managed to blow ourselves up before doing anything, so there's no reason for anyone to really know who we are, unless they were in Providence at that time.
Well, it's interesting. I went to college in the Cambridge area, and they actually had, like, local bands at that time that would make the top 40. There was a band called Duke and the Drivers. And their drummer later went on to play with Billy Squire and Cher, Bobby mm-hmm. Chouinard. So it was real nice. I mean, I don't think there's much of a local thing on commercial radio anymore.
Yeah, it was a different era, and it was a great era for a lot of local bands. Mission of Burma was a Boston band that we were contemporary with.
I remember that.
We played with them some. And we'd play in front of them in Boston. They played in front of us in Providence. That era. So, yeah.
What's your instrument?
I was a drummer.
Oh.
And, you know, like a lot of drummers, you don't pay a lot of attention to what's going on at first, but then you start getting interested in, once you're done, you start looking around the studio and, you know, eventually learning what's going on.
Do you do drum machine work at all?
One of the things that drew me to kind of in a roundabout way end up at a commercial recording studio was I started doing my own music more intensely when the technology changed, using drum machines, MIDI.
Right.
You know, I didn't need to be in a band to produce some music. And, you know, some things happened with that, and that one thing led to another.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I remember guys back in the late 70s, and they could make a nice living. If you're a bass player or a drummer, you do demos.
Right, right.
That's just about gone. And I remember at one point I had decided I was going to be a recording engineer. I actually lived in a recording studio called Sorcerer Sound in Soho, which is where Norah Jones did her big album.
Wow.
Al Firestein was the guy. Now he does soundproofing for Manhattan apartments. I think it's more lucrative.
It probably is.
But at one point I decided to become, or try to become, what you are. And at that time, there were all these big, you know, the Record Plant, Media Sound.
Right.
I mean, real recording studios with big rooms and big analog consoles, and I think at that point they'd just gone from 16 to 24 track. And I remember one of the dopiest things I ever did is I got a job at Media Sound, and they wanted to put me on the graveyard shift.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, how could I play in a band if I'm doing this? So I didn't do it, and it was such a huge mistake.
Well, possibly, yeah. Maybe you hadn't discovered coffee yet.
Yeah. Well, I think I discovered Diet Coke.
That'll keep you away.
But
the industry certainly changed a lot. You know, you mentioned those studios, and not that I'm an expert on the whole industry, but I think that you know, the way people make records is so different now that the budgets just aren't there for that kind of a, you know, full-on studio experience. So the medium-sized places seem to be thriving a little bit more now.
Well, Pro Tools, I mean, you don't need, the cost is down, you don't need a board, right?
Right.
You can just take, you can record at home, take your hard drive, bring it into the studio.
Yeah, some people will mix and match that way. They'll record, you know, maybe live drums at the studio, like the loft where I am, and then take those tracks home and, you know, do more of their project at home in whatever setup they have. And then they might come back to mix, or they might come back for vocals, or they might just come back for mastering.
That's so funny you mention that, because my last guest was Dan Sheehan of the Dan Sheehan Conspiracy, and that's exactly what he did.
Uh-huh.
He got a drummer, taught him the tunes, recorded it really nicely. Then he rented some other studio, I guess, by the month or something, where it could work all night, and then he just overdubbed everything.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I mean, you can certainly do that. Different people have different feelings about it, you know. I mean, I've worked with some musicians that really want everything played at the same time, almost live, and they just feel like that's how it has to be. And then there are other people that worry, will we be able to play it live like it sounds in the studio? Which I think is not really the best way to approach a studio. If you're recording, make the best recording you can do. That's one thing. And then, you know, but I can see you might disagree with that too. So, you know, different people feel differently about the process. But we deal with, you know, just about all those combinations.
It's funny, because the last time that I did real professional recording, probably 20 years or so, we used to go into this place down in Soho that used to be Mountain's rehearsal studio, and they turned it, you know, had Mountain's old equipment, these huge Sun bass amps,
right?
And we would record live to digital videotape,
right?
So
well, that's probably has pretty good sound quality, right?
It actually had good sound quality, but, you know, depending upon the night and how everybody's feeling, some stuff works, some stuff doesn't.
Right.
But I was happy doing that. But I remember I had a Porta studio. Do you remember those?
Well, yeah, yeah.
The TIAC Porta studio. I had a little drum machine. Sounded like a ping pong ball.
Right. I mean, nowadays the technology is so much more sophisticated that I think that... You know, you could do anything like that would work for you in terms of recording your own ideas for songwriting. You know, you get a great idea in the middle of the night, you could use whatever's handy to kind of get the idea down. But I think the days of using that as a demo to even get, you know, gigs is, I don't know if that is really working for people.
Well, don't a lot of people just buy a Mac and there's GarageBand in there and they write a song with GarageBand?
Yeah, a lot of people might do that and then use that as their demo to the musicians who are then going to record.
I gotcha.
But, you know, there are some people whose, you know, budget or whatever might limit them to that being the end product, especially if you're working alone. You know, you might be a singer-songwriter, really, and, you know, you get some backing behind you, and what, you know, you're thinking is you're really showing your lyrics and your singing. And that might work for a lot of people, you know, hopefully to get to some next step where it's going to be maybe fleshed out a little bit more.
Let's say I'm a singer, so I mean, there's lots of different ways to do things. I mean, sometimes I'll have a band come in here and we'll record live, but we're going
right.
live to analog videotape, so the sound is not that great. But sometimes we capture an ambiance.
Yeah.
But, like, for example, you know, three people will come in. They'll do a trio. They may have rehearsed. They may have had one rehearsal. They'll come in and do it. That's a way to go. If someone does that, what kind of what would it cost to do, like, three, you know, just ballpark, three songs live, maybe overdub the vocals, a few guitars. I mean, what would a 3-song package cost?
I get asked questions like that a lot, and it's so difficult to answer because it depends how prepared the musicians are. And, you know, I think...
Well, time would be important. How long do you think it would take to do that?
You could do that in a day if you're reasonably prepared, you know.
And what's a day? 12 hours?
You know, anywhere from 8 to 12 hours, you know, maybe 9 or 10 hours. Obviously, you take breaks in there to really be productive. I mean, you need to take a little break.
Sure.
And you need to get some food and whatnot. So, you know, you might come in, a lot of bands that I work with, you might come in at noon and we, you know, leave at 1 in the morning. And we take breaks, maybe a couple breaks for food, you know, coffee.
And everything's done? I mean, the vocals, the lead guitar, the...
It's completely different. When you work, you know, something like, you know, we've, you know, had a chance to do some major label level things, and they, you know, they might spend a day on the verse for one song, just the vocals. You know, I've been in sessions where... there might be a studio session, professional singer come in, and we'll spend, you know, a full day, 9-10 hours, just doing the vocals for one song. Just the vocals.
Sure.
And this is with a professional singer. But that doesn't mean that everyone has to do that. Most people, you know, that's kind of, you know, there's so many levels that we're talking about. But we might, you know, there could be a local band that's doing shows locally and in the city. And, you know, they want a 3 or 4 song demo, it's possible to do that in a day, if they're prepared. Now, the things that could come up is, you know, the guitar player could break a string and they didn't bring strings. You know, they didn't bring a battery for the tuner, the drummer's late, something breaks and they don't have a backup of it, you know, that kind of thing. It's really out of control of the engineer of the studio.
Understood.
I mean, those things can happen, so, you know, you're always a little reluctant to promise somebody a set amount of time because it's more up to the band really than the studio.
I understand. I was just trying to give you an entree to say, come to our studio, we'll get it done, blah, 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 it'll sound great. But I know, I used to do demos and it cost me a lot of money, worked odd jobs to pay for them. But I know. So you've worked for some major... How could it take 12 hours for a singer to do one song?
Well, you know,
that's interesting.
It is interesting. And when you're in those sessions, they go by really quickly, but you're really, you know, crunching tiny details all the way. And one case, you know, that I was thinking of there, the singer was doing 4, 5, 6-part harmonies in some case. So, you know, doing lots of takes. You know, the producer... A lot. There are producers out there that hear things that most people are never going to hear. So, you know, I can understand some. You know, you'll hear a take. It sounds fantastic, and they'll be like, "Well, you know, okay, let's try it again." You can tell they're not really that happy with it, and it'll end up being better. You know, but that's where some of those top producers. I mean, they hear syllable by syllable. You know, where the things are in tune, where the expression is. You know, exactly what they want. And, you know, you can really get into as much detail as, you know, those people are not worried about the clock. I mean, they're not, you know, worried about the money or how long it takes because their biggest investment was just signing that artist and, you know, the music, you know, all the promotion and marketing behind them, the music video, all those things are much more expensive than recording their songs. So
that's so funny.
Yeah. And, it is, but that's the reality.
Where do you see yourself on the spectrum to raw, live, to punch in like Al Green every syllable and grunt?
You mean, what
your
do I
style,
think about?
Your style as a producer.
Well, my style as a producer is not to that, you know, not to kind of go to that extreme. It depends the style of music you're doing, too. A lot of the pop music, you know, you're into really great detail, and that's not the kind of music I've worked on, but that I don't produce personally. So, you know, that would be more a more organic kind of sound. It's still pretty common to what's called comp vocals, which means you'll do takes, various takes, and pick and choose so that you end up with the best single take. And again, some people philosophically don't like that idea, but believe me, almost any commercial record you're hearing, that's been done on it.
Yeah, and then they'll fly the verse, they'll fly the chorus part over to the second chorus, or...
A singer might focus on the first verse, for example, just, you know, starring the song, and he or she may sing it 4 or 5 times, and if they're happy with those takes, we'll go and we'll listen to just a couple of phrases or a couple of words at a time, and just, you'll be amazed at how different, even when they're tracked, they may sound like they're all the performances were the same, but when you go back and listen to it, there are real differences. And so then you can pick which ones you like the best and move them on to, you know, one take.
So funny, when I did this, you actually used a razor blade and actually cut the...
Right. No more. I mean, the editing is, you know, really easy with Pro Tools.
Okay. Well, I wanted to get to our standard questions. I hope you're going to stay for a part two. And we'll talk about it during the break.
Okay.
Because it's very fascinating to me. So the standard canned questions that I have are, if you went to a desert island, could you name 2 CDs that you might bring with you?
Sure. I think...
holy cow, an easy guess?
Yeah. I think, you know, you could, most people probably could pick, you know, 20 records and be happy with 2 from those. I think something like Dark Side of the Moon would
really?
Be great, because you could listen to it over and over again. There's, you know, it's just such a great album. And then maybe something more modern like Beck's Guero. I mean, that's a great album. So
Beck's?
Guero is the name of the album.
Oh, I thought you were saying Beck's Bolero, which was an old Jeff Beck tune that I love.
Yeah.
No. Dark Side of the Moon, I mean, I remember I was in college, I think my sophomore year when it came out. I think it was Aqualung had come out that year. I mean, it was a great year for rock. And what I loved about it was the great blues guitar on it.
It's great on so many levels. I mean, the musicianship's wonderful, but the production is also really pretty groundbreaking and interesting.
Well, that's what disappoints me. What disappointed me, it sounded so great, and I thought that these guys were really great players, and now when I see, like, behind, you know, VH1 classic Behind the Music, I see it was all the producers. Not that they couldn't really play, but Alan Parsons.
Yeah.
It was all Alan Parsons doing that stuff. But anyway, some nice choices. If you could, now you're a drummer, if you could have a dream band, or you could kick the drummer out of your dream band.
Well, that's an interesting twist.
Right, like for me, you know, I would have been the bass player with the Doors. So they never even had one, wouldn't have to kick one out. But, you know, living or dead, who would you like to play with?
Well, I think it'd be hard to go wrong with John Lennon. You'd know you'd have some good songs.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think he'd be a good guy to be in a band with. You know, both, he would do, obviously, he could do commercially successful things, but he's adventuresome, too. Who knows what he would do?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when he came out with that Primal Scream album. with Mother on it.
It's kind of experimental.
yeah, but he's... I think what I love about John Lennon, he was so human. He could be all about love, or he could all be about mean and nasty in your face. He was just like a real person. He just had so many sides to him.
Yeah, I know, you know, awful lot of talent, a great voice. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. So, guy who knows his answers. Okay, I'm going to give you one more question.
Okay.
What song or songs pushed you over the edge and made you say, this is what I want to do with my life, be a musician or a recording engineer or whatever?
Right. Well, I think this might be true for a lot of musicians. You know, it's probably actually one of my own songs. Just because,
wow.
Not because they're that great, but because creating music is such a joy that it's very addicting. And I think that, you know, you just want to do it again and again. But to more fairly answer your question, I mean, You know, I'd say something like Siberian Katru by Yes. If you listen, I listen to the live version.
But with Alan White? Or
I love Alan White, yeah. And, I mean, there's so much great playing on that. I mean, you know, it's just, I think if it pulls you in, it's going to pull you in all the way.
You know, it's just so funny because we're now in the era where I'm sure most of these rock stars, you know, are on their fifth to sixth kid, third or fourth wife. And even if the singer doesn't want to do the tour, they'll just get someone off of YouTube, stick them in the band, and make some money.
Right.
So I know Yes is going out this fall without their singer.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And actually, someone was telling me they saw, I forgot his name.
John Anderson?
Right. They saw John Anderson with like a children's choir this summer or something. Uh-huh. But Boston's going out without their singer. But very interesting. Very interesting. So, yeah, because Yes was real. Actually, a friend of mine went to see Asia, who was kind of a Yes spinoff.
Right.
Kind of a band who wasted their goodwill by breaking up
after a bunch of big hits and people wanted to see them.
Right. And now, 20 years later, they're back playing the Fairfield Playhouse.
Right.
With the original lineup.
Right. Yeah, that's real hit or miss. I mean, some bands that get together for a reunion, they're really great, and others, you know, they're just doing it for because they can. And it.
Well, I really like that Asia, the first Asia album. I had a friend who saw them. He said their energy was not the same.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, 30 years later.
Yeah, hard to have the same energy.
Well, it was a pleasure having you come down. If you have any of your bands who are not too loud who want to come down, please send them my way.
Yeah, thanks. I'll do that.
And hopefully we'll get to do a part two, either today or some other time.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's nice to meet you. Thanks.
And it's a wrap.